afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's Friday, May 10th, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, happy Friday, Melody.
Oh, happy Friday, and what a... I'm Fridays are always so busy, and I'm so happy that it is Friday. I need a break, and so ladies and gentlemen, you know, you guys are taking advantage of the little pullbacks that we've had, so good for you. Some great deals out there that we're looking at, and, you know, looking at these prices today and everything that's going on, it's... Dave, when we're involved in news every day, and we find it hard to keep up, I can only imagine what it is for the general populace. You know, how in the world can they ever keep up with everything that's twisting and turning, you know, from minute to minute, day to day, week to week, month, you know? So it really is. So, and then to weed through which is truth and which is noise and how to interpret a lot of the information that we're getting. And I'm looking forward to this weekend. I'm going to take a break. But gold today, 1290 was the high. We're looking at 1286 up to 10. Silver, 1491 was the high. 1484, the New York spot price after market right now, up 2 cents. Platinum was up $16 today at 868, and palladium was up 53 at 1359. And of course, those are all trade, especially the white metals, not gold so much. You know, gold is reacting to the dollar, but the white metals pretty much is reacting to the trade news that's out there. The USDX today was down 0.08 at 97.31. Crude oil is the same, 61.62, down 0.08. And the paper markets today, you are looking at the Dow recovered, of course. Thank you, Plunge Protection Team. No one talks about the Plunge Protection Team anymore, but that's what you're in. You know what, Dave? I think the Plunge Protection Team was overtaken by the Trump tweets.
Someone, I'll tell you, someone else needs a vacation, Melody.
The Dow was up 114 points at 25,942. The NASDAQ was up 6 at 7,916. S&P up 10, 2881. 10-year yield, 2.46. Hong Kong was up a buck, but they were hammered over the week. Still in the fear territory as far as what emotion is driving the markets. And of course, Dave, you know, all this is... all on the talks of the news. The how do you like that opening?
Hey, it was go for it.
Of course, we all know that President Trump raised the stakes in the trade conflict with China, of course, because as of today, the U.S. increased tariffs on $200 billion, I guess, goes into effect this morning. Although I've been watching a lot of news reports, and it won't be immediate. There's a lot of inventory that's already docked. All the items that are already on the cargo ships and so forth, they won't be affected. You know, before we see any type of impacts on this, it's 2 weeks. 2 weeks is a very good time in order for them to come together with a trade agreement. And I think that's all that's going on. Despite this new official escalation of this trade war, the Shanghai Composite rose 3%. The Shenzhen soared 4%. Again, we were down this week as well. And China's Commerce Ministry said immediately after the midnight deadline for the tariff hike that it would take immediate countermeasures against the American move. But they did not announce what it would be, and said it deeply regrets the turn of events. I find it very surprising that they wouldn't make that announcement even to the President of the United States. And no one's just privy, or do you think they would withhold that?
No, I think they'd withhold it.
Do you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, to the extent, especially following up on, you know, the surprise tweet by our president last Sunday that announced this new round of tariffs, they may decide, and they may have already, you know, communicated to Lighthizer and or Mnuchin privately, or you know, face to face in the talks that concluded today. But I don't think it would be. I'd be surprised if it would be, you know, a Xi to Trump communique that you know, the details of the Chinese retaliation are spelled out. You know, despite the ongoing talks about the trade agreement, the administration did hike duties on a number of products from 10% to 25%. As Melody indicated, it'll take you know, a few weeks for them to actually kick in. But the move does risk widening a trade war that's, you know, has spooked investors and raised fears about global economic damage. Only a week ago, the White House was boosting hopes that the U.S. and China would resolve their trade dispute this week in face-to-face meetings and potentially have a deal today to announce. Trump first announced the tariff increase last Sunday as the White House accused China of reneging on key parts of an agreement that was in progress.
You know, and then after that, on Wednesday, President Trump claimed that Beijing did break the deal. And Trump also added that he received a beautiful letter from President Xi Jinping and would probably speak to him by telephone. And, you know, it really boils down to the technology and the American companies into handing over their trade secrets, the pressures from China. So that's part of an aggressive campaign to turn Chinese companies into world leaders in robotics, electric cars, and other advanced industries. So I don't know, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, the president called these tariffs an excellent alternative to a trade deal, you know, saying they've brought in billions for the U.S. government. But remember, ladies and gentlemen, U.S. consumers and businesses bear the brunt of tariff costs, not China, as Trump has argued. Industries and, you know, businesses affected by the tariff hikes will be affected as the tariff increase applies to goods exported after May 10th. Patience has grown thin in parts of the U.S. over this impasse. Farmers, especially in key electoral states, want a deal to be signed. The president has prepared to put even more pressure on China as he pushes for an agreement and has threatened to slap 25% tariffs on $325 billion in Chinese goods that remain untaxed. Melody.
You know, I mean, I'm a believer in tariffs, but I think we live in a world where, you know, it's too late to have a positive impact. That's what I believe, because I think the American consumer is so strapped in debt. And you're right; it's all good. If people believe in trickle down, this is trickle down. This is what's going to trickle down to the consumer, and they're already strapped. So, and you'll have corporations where corporate debt has never ever been as high as it is today. I can't remember off the top of my head how many trillions of dollars are in corporations are in debt. So it's not
well over six. That's just non-financial corporations.
Yeah. So to me, I think the timing. I don't know if the timing is the right place to you know, begin with these tariffs. And we already have a lot of tariffs on a lot of products. It's not like we don't have any. So, again, this is just, to me, I think it loosens up. Do you think with tariffs, Dave, that it actually loosens up some funds because our government is so broke to, you know, where we're pushing the past the debt ceiling and so forth? Would tariffs relieve pressure in any area with the amount of money, the billions of dollars that is, I don't know.
I don't either. I would say a negligible impact
compared to our debt. Yeah. Well, you know, as I talked about, you know, consumers, you know, having such difficult times, consumer prices rose in April. Hey, but the underlying inflation remained muted, suggesting the Federal Reserve could keep interest rates unchanged for a while. The Labor Department this morning said that the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, increased 0.3% last month, lifted by rising gasoline, rents, and healthcare costs. The CPI gained 0.4%. And excluding the volatile food and energy components, it just cracks me up. The CPI edged up 0.1%, according to the government. Apparel prices dropped for a second straight month. And in the 12 months through April, the core CPI increased 2.1% after gaining 2% in March.
Well, as listeners know, the Fed last week kept interest rates unchanged and signaled little desire to adjust its monetary policy anytime soon. Jerome Powell said he believed the recent weak inflation readings may, in his words, wind up being transient. The Fed, which has a 2% inflation target, tracks a different measure, the core personal consumption expenditures price index, PCE, for its monetary policy decision-making. The core PCE price index increased 1.6% annualized in March. That was the smallest rise in 14 months after advancing 1.7% in February. The April PCE index will be published later this month.
In April, gasoline prices rose 5.7%, Dave, accounting for more than two-thirds of the increase in the CPI last month.
Wow.
And that's following up on its 6.5% surge in March. We saw some food prices dipped 0.1% in April, but it gained 0.3% the month prior. Of course, healthcare costs increased just about the same, 0.3%, and it matched March's gain. By the way, Shadow Stats alternative measure inflation show an annualized increase of 9.7% in April, up from the 9.6% in March and 9.2% in February. And of course, we know that John Williams uses alternative inflation figures based on government's numbers from 1980s formula. So that's the real world, ladies and gentlemen. But if you want to believe the government, oh, we can't find any inflation around here.
Well, it just, even as one who has tended to give the Fed and our other governmental institutions the benefit of the doubt over the years, not as much as today, I mind you, I still find it absolutely bizarre that we're talking about headline versus core inflation. With core, the food and energy prices. And here we're talking about, Melody mentioned gasoline rising, accounted for more than two-thirds of last month's increase in the CPI. And that's not what they use. I mean, it boggles my mind, and it just further hurts their credibility. And when I see things, other people commenting on people like, John Williams' shadow stats being so incredible or non-credible, I shake my head and sort of smirk at the irony of that, because, I mean, there's enough of nonsense to go around, ladies and gentlemen. And unfortunately, we have to read between almost all the lines anymore and not take anything, at face value. But anyway.
But you know what? When you look at the benefits, the Social Security, they use that lower inflation rate to do any types of adjustments. And that's just, so there's a lot of reasons why they do it. And it also impacts gold. Can you imagine if they came out and actually stated the fact that we're at a 10% inflation rate? Do you have any idea where gold would go? And the stock markets would crash? And then you also ask yourself, the rise in stock markets, well, that's inflationary. That's why it's rising. And you're looking at a 10%, which what John Williams states is 10%. So, but it's what they say, and it's not what they do, Dave.
Yep, indeed. Once again, this week, proving that over and over again.
Yeah.
Well,
and I think it's the same with these tariffs. Oh, 1 minute we got a great deal, we're closed. Next minute it's falling apart. Next minute it's this. Next minute it's that. It's such a roller coaster ride with all these announcements. Personally, what I believe, I think they're closer to a deal than anybody believes or announces or makes impacts. We've got 2 weeks for them to actually cinch the deal. And then everybody's going to love this administration because they're going to say that, you know, it's just up
the
and down.
The strategy worked.
Down. The strategy to the people of the United States. And
ladies and gentlemen, I wouldn't make your reservations at Mar-a-Lago just yet. Well, you know, anyway, the outlook for growth in the U.S. economy over the next four quarters is a little bit weaker than in the last survey, according to 40 forecasters surveyed by the Fed of Philadelphia. The forecasters there predict that real GDP will grow at an annual rate of 1.9% the second quarter, 2.1% the next. That's down from previous estimates of 2.4 and 2.2, respectively. I'm surprised at the half a percentage point difference in the second quarter. On an annual average, over annual average base, the panel predicts real GDP will grow between 1.9 and 2.6% from 2019 to 2022. A lower path for the unemployment rate accompanies that outlook for growth. The forecasters predict the unemployment rate will average between 3.6 and 3.9% from that same period to 2022.
Well, we're just about heading into a break. We talked a little bit about this yesterday. North Korea's missiles launches at a new threat. North Korea has launched short-range ballistic missiles yesterday for a second time in a week. That's prompted President Trump to acknowledge that nobody's happy about the implications for his diplomatic effort to denuclearize the country. And hours before the president's comments, the U.S. said it had seized the North Korean ship that was flouting sanctions, by exports of coal that we had mentioned yesterday also. So the two missiles launched yesterday flew eastward from a base northwest of Pyongyang and traveled about 260 miles and 170 miles, according to South Korea. We're going to finish this up when we come back from break. Please stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Oh, let's see. We were talking about North Korea, and I had mentioned to Dave during the break that shortly after these missiles went off from North Korea, that the U.S., I don't have the details in front of me, I'm just going from memory, and it's a aging memory, but no. Anyway, but the U.S. actually did some missiles also. I don't have the details, the kind or the, so forth, shortly thereafter. And the U.S. said that it was just a training session that was going on, Dave. So,
yeah, it's interesting. Don't hear that too many places in the mainstream news, do we?
No, we don't. I mean, that's scary.
Yeah, we also talked off the air about these new satellite images that showed apparently this long secret North Korean military base in the mountains outside of Pyongyang, that American, the CIA and others have been monitoring for years, but its location was supposedly never publicly known. So, these images are, another contradiction in a sense that, diplomacy is leading to the elimination of, nuclear and missile threats, that the North initially said could devastate the Western United States.
Well, you know what? He has certainly risen in acknowledgments, from China. He's visited Russia. He's, he's got, partners. He's got friends. And well, I don't think any of them are friends, but at least he's got partners, and they have a common goal. And so he's—I don't know. It's a bizarre situation, and
these sanctions have got to be hurting them. Anyway.
Well, yeah, but you know what? The sanctions might be hurting them. But they've been on sanctions for how long? And the thing of it is, it's just like this cargo ship. They were getting coal anyway. So, and the thing of it is, I mean, and it was being, the money was being funneled through a U.S. bank. So it's like, you can't, just like his little hat that he wore. I mean, so
the fedora.
Yes. Oh, so I think things are going, probably getting around the sanctions anyway, and I mean, we don't know what he's getting from China. We know South Korea really wants to, make peace. They want a treaty. The end of the Korean War between North Korea and South Korea. Did they do that, or were they just thinking about it?
They came to an agreement in principle.
Yeah.
But that involved also, some considerations, including the return of the remains of U.S. soldiers from the Korean War. That hasn't happened.
And we got some.
Very few. Very few.
But I mean, the South wants to work with the North, so you don't know what's...
Well, I think therein lies the basis of any agreement.
Yeah.
That's why I hope they continue to talk.
Going into a different topic here, we often hear about China being called a major currency manipulator, and the Trump administration is expanding the number of countries that it's scrutinizing for currency manipulation, and Vietnam could be added as a manipulator. Gee, who'd ever think? For artificially holding down the value of its fiat dong. After meeting all three criteria, the Treasury Department uses to test for currency interventions. The Treasury issues a report twice a year in foreign currencies, and this latest report that's still expected this month, the number of countries whose currency practices the U.S. examines for this possible manipulation is going to rise to about 20 from 12.
It's a big increase.
Yeah, it is. I wonder if the U.S. is going to be on there. I wonder if we... President no. Trump has said in the past that China, Russia, the European Union all manipulate their currencies to gain unfair trade advantages. Ours is too strong to get, we need to be weakening ours, and that's the whole point. We can't, and they want to.
Yeah, right. That's right. Well, look, the U.S. hasn't labeled a major trade partner or currency manipulator since the mid-1990s. And the label has no practical effect anyway, other really than requiring the U.S. to engage in negotiations with offending countries, but would have market repercussions for any government, named a manipulator. Current policy has been a central part of trade deals that the U.S. has struck with Mexico, Canada, and South Korea, and expected to be a part of an agreement with China if and when one should be reached. Treasury's latest report also is expected to remove India and South Korea from its watch list. That's for foreign exchange practices of countries it monitors closely. So far, Treasury has examined its 12 largest trade partners plus Switzerland, and an expanded watch list reportedly could include Russia, Thailand, Indonesia, Vietnam, as we are talking about, Ireland, and or Malaysia, all of which have large trade surpluses with the United States.
So let me ask you a question, Dave.
What?
If we weaken our dollar, that would automatically change the trade deficit, wouldn't it not?
Sure.
So whether we're actually shrinking the deficit or not with the change in currency would show that it would.
Well, you raise an excellent point.
Same stuff, same product, just revalued in different currency would show a different number.
Absolutely. And that's what, I generally think the trade deficit numbers are, if not a farce, then, highly misleading about, their value per se. It's really the currencies.
And the thing of it is, every country manipulates their currencies. Ours is stronger, but they want a weak one, and that's probably a part of it, them whining about it and complaining about it.
Who's whining?
The only way they're going to eliminate, in my view, and I've said this before, the only way they can eliminate countries manipulating their currencies is to have the basket of currencies with gold in there.
You bet.
It's the only way that's going to hold these countries accountable. And everybody would be equal because gold would be the defining factor of where these currencies would all be set. And I do believe that's coming. It will be a trade unit. It will be because, they'll just continue to do what they're doing. But I think that'll happen after the collapse. I think that'll happen after everybody, defaults on their debt and so forth. I don't think it's going to be, hey, let's do this to keep the countries. No. It's going to come after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
Your latest blog, which is going to go out today after the program, is about how a ramped up trade war with China, how it's going to affect Americans. And of course, the listeners can subscribe to the weekly blogs and the newsletters by going to dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, and also on Facebook at dgscoins. So tell us a little more, Dave.
Well, as you mentioned, as we've been talking today and all this week, what a bizarre day and week in the paper, especially, and precious metal markets, Melody. You know, with all the volatility in the paper markets this week, you'd think that both gold and silver would have soared. Mm-hmm. You know, remember earlier in the week, we reported a couple of experts' visions or estimates on our financial survival programs. First, Mo Zolfikar of the Lombardi Letter said that gold should, you know, burst through the $2,000 price mark. And later, Dan Oliver, founder and CEO of Myrmecon Capital, said that not only should gold not be at $1,900, which it isn't, but that was, you know, as a context, you know, for, you know, why gold should be at $1,900, but he doesn't think it should be at $1,900. It should be at $3,000. So well, go figure.
Well, don't forget Duffy, the chairman of
CME. Oh, well,
CME.
Yeah. I mean, he said it first.
2 years ago, he says gold should be trading at $5,000 and $6,000 based on what was happening 2 years ago. It's far worse today than it was 2 years ago. And we are heading in the right direction, Dave. I mean, over the last 6 months, you have gold up 7%, silver's up 5%. I know it doesn't feel that way to the listeners and buyers of gold because we have gold breaking 1,300 and silver breaking 15, but gold is still up in the 6 months, 7% and 5%.
Yeah, it is surprising when you step back and think about it for a second with all the day-to-day reporting that goes on. But you know, expect things, ladies and gentlemen, especially in the paper markets, to stay wacko for the foreseeable future. You know, for one thing, you know, we signaled, or the president did, in a Twitter post that he could stick with China tariffs for a long time. His words. Importantly, he also signaled the U.S. could slap tariffs on another $325 billion of Chinese goods. We'll get to that in a minute. For another, with North Korea continuing to test missiles and the U.S. sending a carrier fleet and B-52 bombers to the Persian Gulf, there's good reason to be on you know, on edge more than usual.
That is really amazing. And also, yeah, and we get a couple bucks out of gold, but it is amazing. 10 years of gold would have been up $100. Yeah. But you write in your blog that the ongoing war or the ongoing trade war with China could also cost the average American family hundreds of dollars.
Well, this is interesting. Oxford Economics says it all depends on how extreme the administration gets with protectionist policies, and by extension, to what extent China retaliates. You know, in the lower end, if the 25% tariffs that went into effect today, the extension of them, are permanent and China retaliates, the U.S. economy could lose $62 billion in economic output by as early as next year. That total translates to an equivalent loss of close to $500 per American household. The firm also considered the administration imposing 25% tariffs on the other $325 billion of imports from China, not yet covered. You know, that's beyond the $200 billion of goods currently subject to the tariffs. And should China retaliate, as I would think is highly likely, you know, Oxford estimates that the U.S. economy would take a $100 billion hit by 2020, by next year, a cost of $800 per household.
Is it possible that this trade war could hit the job market?
Oh, gosh, that is an excellent question. Well, according to Oxford, today's tariff increase alone could result in 200,000 fewer jobs, with growth falling below 2% in early 2020. Tariffs on all Chinese imports, plus retaliation, Oxford, would lead to 360,000 fewer new jobs being created. You know, as most listeners understand, low employment and a strong economy, at least as reported by the government, have been a strong point for the administration heading into next year's elections. Just last month, the Bureau of Labor and of Labor Statistics reported that unemployment hit its lowest level in 50 years. In the first quarter, we now know that the government reported GDP increased 3.2%, far exceeding analyst expectations. And productivity during the quarter saw its biggest gain in 5 years. Now, as a major exporter of soybeans, one of the U.S. exports long targeted by China, Louisiana will be especially hard hit by the trade war.
Well, you know, these China tariffs, they also target plastic products. And I think in the second and third rounds of retaliation, the chemical industry began the first wave of more than $200 billion in new and planned infrastructure.
Indeed. You know, Alex Camara, who's CEO of Audio Control in Seattle, said, "It frustrates me a little when I see headlines that tariffs are attacks on the Chinese economy." She says, "No, they're not. They're a direct impact on the cost in cash I, meaning she, has to spend on employment and investment." She adds, "This is a direct tax on American businesses."
So exactly who are the biggest losers, Dave? And, you know, I mean, China's going to retaliate. Why wouldn't they?
I know. Well, assuming that China does retaliate, according to one source, Melody, employment in these 10 industries would be affected the most in terms of jobs. Number 10, treated paper manufacturing. They have 59,000 jobs. Fruit and vegetable canning. They have 60,000. Wineries. They also have 60,000. Number 7, truck and utility vehicle manufacturing, 65,000. Car manufacturing, 119,000. Number 5, animal slaughtering, 139,000. Gosh, I don't know why I didn't think there'd be that many jobs there. 4, fruit and nut tree farming, 193. Pharmaceutical manufacturing, 202,000. Number 2, aircraft manufacturing, 230,000. And, of course, number 1, plastics, plastic products manufacturing, 294,000.
That is amazing. Ladies and gentlemen, again, you can read all of Dave's blog at our website, dgscoins.com. That's dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for the newsletter and the blog. And you can also go to our Facebook page at dgscoins. Let's see, we got 15 seconds. I think we're just going to go down and we're going to talk about Mexico is turning down U.S. funds to fight drugs.
Yeah, how about it?
Do you want to give a teaser? You got about 10 seconds?
Well, real quickly, for 11 years, the U.S. has tried to help Mexico fight narco trafficking and other organized historic crime through a historic billion-dollar plan called the Merida Initiative. Mexico's new president, his response?
Basta.
No, thank you.
Hasta la vista, baby. Hey, we'll be right back. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at dgscoins.com. That's dgscoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And heading into the break, Dave, you were telling us about how Mexico is turning down funds to fight drugs.
Yeah.
It's not a small amount either.
No, it's not. $3 billion.
Yeah.
Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador, who took office in December as Mexico's new president, is the first democratically elected leftist president, no less, says he'd like to reorient the program away from crime fighting and toward investment in social programs. He, in Mexico City this week, he said, "It hasn't worked. We don't want cooperation and the use of force. We want cooperation for development." An interesting response, Melody. The surprise announcement apparently has injected a note of uncertainty into Mexico's relationships with the White House.
Well, yeah, but you know what? You can't forget, when did they have that G20 meeting, and you had Kushner fly into Mexico, and Obrador gave him the highest medal of honor that Mexico has to give to an outside. So I...
What a great kiss-up that was.
Yeah, yeah. But so Obrador, again, well, with that cordial relationship with Washington, even as Trump has, continues to bash Mexico on, the trade and immigration, this comes perilously close to upsetting the apple cart and really aggravating the U.S. Now, this is a Latin American expert at the Seattle International Foundation who has studied the Merida?
I think so.
The Merida program, and his name was Eric Olson. He says that the U.S. Embassy downplayed Obrador's comments, noting that the initiative had evolved under different Mexican governments, and saying the Trump administration looked forward to continued dialogue. So Obrador took office promising a new approach to tackling organized crime. He pledged to create social programs to draw young people away from lucrative work for drug gains. Well, no type of social program is going to make up the difference, from the drug gangs. He raised eyebrows by saying he didn't want to pursue narco bosses. There is no war on drugs, he said in January, and would instead prioritize reducing the homicide rate. Yeah.
Well, so far, Obrador's strategy hasn't brought much change. Now, it's early in his new administration, but the number of killings in Mexico has continued to rise, hitting a record nearly 8,500 in the first quarter of 2019. Now, analysts say that Obrador seems to have a poor understanding of the Merida initiative. The Mexican leader, on Tuesday said, "We don't want armed helicopters. We don't want resources for other types of military support." In fact, in recent years, much of the Merida initiative funding has gone toward training police and prosecutors as Mexico tries to improve its security forces and build a more independent professional justice system. But the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration representative, said, changing the focus away from the drug cartels and drug interdiction could lead to an increase in the amount of illegal drugs flowing over the border to the U.S. Mexico is the main source of heroin and methamphetamine sold here. Is a major corridor for cocaine and fentanyl, according to the DEA.
Well, this is something interesting, too. Isn't the United States the drug capital of the world?
I would think so. It's in terms of use.
Yeah.
I don't know now with legalization having marijuana, you know, come into reality. It could be the leading manufacturer now of pot, overshadowing Mexico and Colombia. But gosh, I believe we're the number one user or abuser of the illegal drugs.
That is such a sad commentary. And I know I've been in many debates for those who believe we should legalize everything and take their criminal element out of it. And, you know, I just can't go down that road. And it's, you know, when you look at the rest of the world and we're the leading country, you don't stay on top, ladies and gentlemen, when the people, your citizens, are the number one drug users in the world. I mean, am I wrong, Dave? I mean,
I'd like to see a study. I'd like to see some other people who are smarter than I, how they view that. I don't see how.
And, well, you always will get the story of, I don't know, Switzerland or Denmark or one of those, you know, where, you know, oh, they've legalized it and they've improved their – well, you know, these are also socialistic communities also where everybody screams about how bad socialism is, but yet it's okay to legalize. I mean, anyway, I get puzzled sometimes. Just puzzled over various reasonings, you know, from folks. But this is interesting. President Maduro, Venezuela, he's actually reopening borders with Aruba and Brazil. And he had shut off the land and sea access in February to block the opposition from delivering international humanitarian aid. The Venezuelan industry minister, geez, the VIM, VIM.
You gotta warm up for that phrase.
They said today that the borders with Colombia and two other Dutch Caribbean islands remain shuttered because their leaders have not sufficiently assured that Venezuela's sovereignty would be respected. Hopefully wisdom prevails for the authorities of the other islands. And as they avoid becoming instruments of aggression against the territory of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela, the South American's nation's government ordered the borders with Aruba, Bonaire, Curaçao, Brazil, Colombia, that was closed 3 months ago, as the opposition tried to deliver food and medical supplies.
Yeah, that aid was provided largely by the U.S., you know, key ally of. Maduro's opposition leader, Juan Guaido, who's recognized by over 50 nations as Venezuela's rightful president. Maduro dismissed the aid push as an infringement of Venezuela's sovereignty and a crudely disguised U.S.-backed attempt to remove him from power. The bulk of the assistance was stored across the border in Colombia, while smaller amounts were held in Brazil and the Caribbean. Opposition leaders tried driving the aid across the land borders in trucks, but were blocked by state security forces. Elisami said Maduro's government held talks with high-level officials in Aruba and Brazil and said they'd reached the necessary agreement to ensure that a repeat of the events in February would not occur again.
You know, he said Aruba's leader in particular had been emphatic in the non-interference in the international affairs of Venezuela. And he also said that until the other two Dutch Caribbean islands and Colombia assure Venezuelan authorities that they will cease all hostility and attempts to destabilize Maduro's government, they're going to keep those borders closed. So the relationships between Venezuela and its neighbors have grown increasingly prickly as many leaders in the region has moved to support Guaido's claim. It doesn't look like Maduro is going to be overtaking Maduro from power. I can't see that happening.
Nah.
He's just not strong enough.
Not unless there's a movement in the military.
Yeah. I found this out today. I was doing a little bit of research, and Park City, they're planning to close 45.
Party City. You had a Freudian slip of a shopping mall that is close to some of your relatives, I believe.
Yes, the Party Supply Company. They're going to close 45 of its 870 stores in 2019, this year. This was released yesterday. And the Party Supply Company also said it secured a new source of helium that should help relieve pressure from a global helium shortage.
Mm.
I didn't know there was a helium shortage. That has squeezed balloon sales.
Melody, there must also be a shortage of sopranos roaming the earth these days.
Well, I guess if you have to blame something, you know. But they did say that the stores, the closure of these stores were not related to the helium shortage. Yeah. He says they believe this new source could substantially eliminate the shortfall that they were experiencing at current allocation rates and improve our ability to return to a normal level of latex and metallic balloon sales. Well, it sounds like they are kind of blaming their sales.
Yeah. Yes. You know? Yes, they are.
Party City made the announcements as they reported their first quarter revenue growth of 1% and a retail sales growth of 4%. So, but the company typically closes about 10 to 14 stores annually, but it's just a higher number this year, Dave.
Yeah, we don't know the specific locations of these stores other than, you know, there are three in California that have been published. One in Connecticut, one in Illinois, and one in Moses Lake in the state of Washington. Boy, those closures, Melody, are going to certainly affect families all across the country, and you know, mine included. Where will we go for all of our kiddie party shopping?
Big tech is there's battles over corporate power that are being played out over the course of this 20th century is going to provide the best clues on how companies like Google, Facebook, and Amazon might ultimately be reined in. You have major tech executives have urged regulators to adopt approaches from the past to regulate their businesses, and lawmakers are turning to history. I don't know how they can turn to history for lessons in how to cut big tech down to size, because we've never had big tech before.
No, they want to use that, I guess, different models that have been used throughout history for other industries, you know, and hopefully apply it successfully to, you know, the Facebooks of the world.
Do you think that's even possible?
I'm hopeful that it is. I mean, I don't know enough about all of this to know whether any of those models can be used successfully against big tech. I mean, part of it, I think, is going to, you know, be determined by our lawmakers and regulators' courage. I can't think of a better word to view these big companies beyond, you know, the issue of whether or not they're monopolies or not and ought to be broken up, but whether they're willing to view them as, you know, media-like companies, journalistic companies. And, you know, I think therein lies the potential opening for being able to, you know, regulate them and to protect, you know, our privacy, for example, which just seems to be, you know, the power of Facebook and Google and all these big companies.
Ain't going to happen on the privacy level, because that's just, we're not there anymore. People don't even know what privacy is, and it's just shared too much, and our privacy is history, I think. I don't think we'd ever go back unless it totally collapsed.
Yeah.
And started over. But yeah, I can't imagine, you know, that's gone. Here's something too interesting, Dave. Japan is pushing the limits of rail travel.
Yeah.
It's testing the fastest ever Shinkansen bullet train. capable of speeds of as much as 400 kilometers, which is about 250 miles per hour. Called the Alpha X, the train is scheduled to go into service in 2030. Rail company JR East plans to operate it as an equivalent of 225 miles per hour, and that would make it 10 kph faster than China's.
Fuxing Hao.
Which links Beijing and Shanghai and has the same top speed. And, you know, when I think of these countries that have this type of train and the speed and the modernization, and you go to Dubai, all these countries, and then you come to the United States, and we can't even get our airports up to date. Our roads, you can't even get potholes filled in our roads. You have the United States infrastructure crumbling. We're 20 plus trillion, 22, 23, 70 trillion, 200. You pick a number in there, ladies and gentlemen. And we can't even use any of that debt money to do anything because it all goes into paying the interest. So there is no money left over to do anything. And all of these countries, and you don't think that's not going to have an impact on trade and our wages? Because who wants to come here and do business when everything is crumbling? 800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And it just isn't this administration, ladies and gentlemen. It's been all of them for a very long time. Thank you, Dave.
Thanks for the pleasure.
And we'll be back on Monday. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
If I got me a wealthy man.